They ain't ready for me.
Good morning, Sandy Williams, sitting in for Earl Ingram. We've been in a time warp, maybe, if you've been listening to the show, because just 10 minutes ago it was yesterday's show, and now it's today's show. We had a technical glitch, and we had an hour of replay this morning for the first hour. Now we're into hour two, and this is actually hour two of today. I've got with me, who have I got with me? Scott Williams.
One of the Williams boys.
Yeah. Who was, so this is a continuation of yesterday. It's yesterday again today. Connor, we're up and flying, are we?
Whoop. Yes, we are.
Yeah. And in fact, I think that music we heard was a production of Connor's. We might talk about that later.
Yeah. My song, Do the Dirt Walk.
Do the Dirt Walk?
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
It's got to have its own dance.
It does. It
Heck
does.
Yeah.
I have a dance for it.
Yeah.
All right. Called The Dirt Walk.
The Dirt Walk.
It.
And can you do it?
Yeah.
Well,
It's real simple. It's just like a step.
One step.
Yeah. It's like one of those.
Even you can do it, Sandy.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
probably.
The point. You probably could, actually.
Yeah.
I think, TikTok out of it.
I think I could. Let's not underestimate the...
Oh, Sandy, you could be an influencer.
Oh, I am. I'm operating under an alias. But, yeah, not really.
Old is the new.
Yeah. So, ayahuasca, what's that stuff?
Man, we're going to go right into number 12, huh?
Yeah. What's that all about?
Well, I mean, look... There's a lot of eccentric guys in pro sports, and it's become increasingly clear and apparent that 12 on the Packers is one of them.
Yeah.
He came out and said that in order to prepare himself, I guess emotionally and otherwise, for I think it was one of his two MVP seasons, he had a spiritual journey by drinking ayahuasca, which is one of the world's strongest.
Do you drink it, or is it? It's a mushroom based sort of a.
I mean, I don't know anything about it. I heard all this from a friend of a friend. No, I believe they to make it into a tea, and then you drink it, and you have to like. I think you travel to some place where you get a shaman, and you go on a spiritual journey. And that's where he met his spirit lover, Blue, BLU, and she's half coyote, half star sunrise and sunset.
Okay, well, that's not quite true, but...
I don't know.
But her name is Blue.
BLU, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
that's all I know about her.
Yeah, so Aaron is not exactly mainstream in everything about...
Well, he's from Chico. So it's not, you know,
California.
We can't anticipate that we would understand being, you know, multi-generational Wisconsinites.
So what we're saying is Aaron is a complicated guy.
Yeah, well, he's complex.
Complex. And actually, that was the epiphany I had on the drive here. When I come out here, I think about what we might talk about on the radio. And this morning, I realized that complexity is the mother of bias. It's the mother of propaganda. You know, the world has gotten more complex. Earl always criticizes me about talking about answering everything by saying, well, it's complex. And then I start talking about its complexities. And so, you know, things have gotten more complex, and maybe they've always been complex. But the world's appetite to understand complexity, I think, has gone down materially. And I don't know whether it's the appetite or the capability to understand complexity, because I think data sources, information sources, the people who would explain complexity to us have maybe lost, one, the willingness to explain complexity in all of its detail, and two, we've maybe lost our appetite to read about it.
Yeah, but where there is an appetite to read about it, there's also like an unlimited amount of resources that are basically just garbage, you know, that are not true, they're not evidence-based, they don't have any bearing on in reality. And so you get opinion-based media outlets that are, you know, where people are interested, they find an echo chamber for what the things they think they believe, and then that's a powerful medicine.
But we have the media, and it seems to me that the media has morphed too, because I think the media used to spend a greater degree of energy and effort on providing something like less biased information, more balanced information. And I think that they found that that didn't lead to the kind of clicks, it didn't lead to the kind of attention that they could draw from feeding the public with what they wanted to hear rather than maybe what they needed to hear in terms about stuff, about complexity. complex matters. And so now we've ended up with a media that's suspect maybe in and of itself for being less than forthright about all the complexities. And so, and then we've got a public that's suspicious about the media too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, like in the Alex Jones trial, I read an article that talked about how the judge admonished Jones because, it, you know, just because you believe something to be true, Mr. Jones, doesn't mean that it is.
Uh-huh.
And it was because there were facts that pointed to the fact that something that he strongly had a strong opinion about was not based in fact. And so the judge was basically admonishing him for giving an answer that was, you know, predicated only on what he believed. And I think that that's what a lot of Americans are doing now. It's they think they know about whatever it is, and yeah. they have a belief about that, and then they go in search of information that reinforces what they believe they know and believe to be true about something.
Well, and the information is going to be presented to them by people who have decided for whatever reason that they're going to explain the complexities to the public. But those people explaining the complexities always tend to carry a bias themselves. So, you know, if you're a lobbyist for an organization and you're going into a congressperson's office and you're trying to explain the complexities of the particular legislative matter that they're considering, let's face it, you're going to explain those complexities in a manner which is strongly biased in favor of your employer, whoever has employed you. And similarly, the government is going to explain things to us in a manner that puts the government in the best light. And that's what I think made people extremely nervous about, for instance, the information the government was giving us about vaccinations. You know, the government had lost its, has over the years lost its credibility with the public. You know, they told us what they wanted us to hear about Vietnam, a whole generation of us, and we all learned about that, you know, startlingly and clearly, and without, it was clear. And by 1980, it was clear that what the government was telling us in 1968 and 69 and 70 wasn't true at the time they were telling us that. And they essentially knew that, but they were explaining the complexities of the matter and clarifying it so we could dumb it down and understand it the way they wanted us to understand it.
Well, it's sure scuttled LBJ's plans, right? I mean,
Yeah, he couldn't.
that couldn't run for president again. He lost his legitimacy.
Yeah. I mean, the Vietnam, yeah, cost a guy that was, you know, probably the most powerful president we've had. He was a one-termer, basically. Yeah. And so that was startling.
But, you know, the other thing that I think about as well that we talked about yesterday is the attack on public education. And, you know, the reason as a teacher that I feel, you know, obvious I'm biased on this subject as a teacher to an extent. However, you know, the goal of school is to create critical thinkers, and the notion that there's ideologies that are, you know, embedded in the institution that are then being, you know, used as propaganda in order to sway kids to the left is nonsense. Now, that's not to suggest that there aren't teachers who are biased and teaching in a biased way. Of course there are. You know, there's a spectrum of performance in all professions, and that includes teaching. However, you know, those of us that are doing the job the way that I was trained to, and that we all are, you know, believe, you know, certainly all the teachers I've worked with, is to help students think critically about every subject, to always question, you know, in my classroom, it's question the teacher, question the textbook, you know, ask pressing questions that demand evidence in order to receive an answer that's acceptable to you.
Yeah.
You know, balance that information that you get from different media outlets and diverse sources, and then decide what the truth is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've talked about it on the air earlier, but to me, the most important question in the whole lexicon of questions, the whole is why. And isn't school all about teaching kids to ask themselves why, and then to work out in their mind the process of deliberating to figure out why, right?
Absolutely. And I think, too, like, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, I was saying, you know, in a classroom, you're always, as a teacher, especially in social studies, you're always encouraged when a student shows strong convictions on anything, especially intellectual topics and complex topics. So, I mean, if I have a student that shows strong opinions or beliefs in any direction, I always reward that by saying that's so great that you have strong ideas about that.
Yeah.
But I tell them, but don't become rigid. You know, make sure you continue to ask why. Because how old are you right now? Well, I'm 13. Okay. Well, when you're 42 and you have kids and a house and a mortgage and everything else, you know, your opinion on that might well change, and you don't want to become hardened to understanding, you know, the context with which within which you live and the way and things that you therefore then believe.
Well, and I think the answer to the question why is always based on factual evidence, and it's based on a development of further information. So the answer to why can evolve over time as the amount of information gathered to explain to you why becomes more profound. You know, the answer to the pantheistic religions back 4000 BC to why do we have thunderstorms, you know, was a different answer than they've developed since then, as we've developed far more information about how it is that thunderstorms are generated, right? So, you know, it used to be caused by a god named Thor, you know, and now maybe the analysis is different as to the cause. Now, there still might be a supernatural cause to the very most elemental cause of weather. But you know, that's a whole different analysis.
I've been watching an outstanding Netflix show on the Scandinavian version of the story of Thor, by the way. Ragnarok.
Uh-huh.
It's a great show.
Yeah, well,
check it out.
Yeah, there we go. That's yes. In fact, I've watched Ragnarok. I believe. Yeah, yeah. It's there's a lot of violence amongst the Vikings. And bloodthirsty.
It's a modern story. It's a teenager.
Oh, okay. This is an updated version.
It's an updated version of Thor. He becomes. It's a teenager who becomes Thor.
Ah, well, and so we've jumped the track.
There it is.
Yeah, but back to complexity. Well, that show might be complex. And we have a break going, Connor? Is that where we're headed?
Yes, we do. We have about 1 minute left.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I intend today, I think, to try and weave this notion of complexity into the things we talk about, because it strikes me that the American public's view of issues in foreign affairs like Ukraine and China are marked by a simplistic analysis of what are end up being really complex issues. The same is true with domestic affairs and with the economy. We've gotten so used to having things dumbed down for us that maybe we need to step back from this and figure out that we need to get back to individual deliberate thinking, individual questioning why, and get ourselves to a position where with greater understandings about the complexity of why, we can possibly reach agreements. I think we're going to a break now. We'll be back to this after the break.